This evening, our speaker comes to us from Newtown, and that would be Ann. Ann?
Hi, everybody. My name is Ann, and I am an alcoholic. And I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak today, and my friend Holly, who brought me here tonight. And it's always an honor and a privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope with, you know, with people, you know. And I think that's our you know, job when we get sober, when we recover from this fatal disease, is to spread the message. My sobriety date is April 13th of 2008. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. I have a home group, which I participate in, and I'm an active member of my home group. And I think that's all important. That's, you know, we need to, you know, where are you in the fellowship and the program? And, you know, what it was like for me, I'll share a little bit about my story, what it was like, what happened, and where I'm at today. I'm not a first-timer. I've had periods of sobriety. I at one time had 5 years. I had one time at 10 years, and ended up relapsing. But I'll get into a little bit, you know, I'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, to qualify myself, I grew up, I'm one of seven. I grew up in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. I'm one of seven. I'm a middle child of seven. And I know as growing up, I never felt like I fit in. I never felt good enough. You know, I was a chubby little kid. You know, I always perceived my sisters to be, you know, smarter than me. And you know, I never felt like I fit in my family. I always wanted to be in the family next door. I thought they had it better. I always, you know, looked at that family and thought they had more love in their family. Like, I was never happy with where I was at. And so I grew up with this, you know, as if I was a scared kid. I felt, you know, I never felt like I fit in. Like I said, I went to school. I had, you know, they call it, they didn't have a term for it back when I went to school, but I was dyslexic. So I was labeled stupid and, you know, that kind of thing. Today, you know, they have a word, they have a name for it, but I transposed numbers. Like when I started, when I went from first to second grade, I'd have to learn how to write again because I wrote, you know, from right to left instead of left to right. It was just, I was dyslexic, and they just, you know, I was labeled not stupid, but, you know, I was, you know, and they didn't have, like, tracks back then, but, you know, so I never felt right. I never felt right in my skin, and, you know, I'm saying all this, I know this is, like, most of us have, like, similar stories like this, but, you know, just, you know, childhood wasn't fun for me. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I have a sister who is dead as a direct result. My oldest sister died about 3 years ago. She had other issues, but she died as an indirect result of alcohol. She could never get this program. And I had a grandfather who, you know, lived with us before he, you know, passed on, but he had, you know, I didn't know it then, but he had the effects of wet brain. So he was a bad alcoholic and never was afforded the treatment of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. Just was never introduced to him. It was around at the time, but he was never introduced to it. So, you know, and, you know, I have, you know, on both sides, I have an uncle who died a violent death of alcohol. So it's been in my family. And I knew growing up, like, I just, you know, alcohol wasn't the route that I wanted to go. I knew that. But I didn't understand that once, you know, if you are a carrier of this disease, that you have no choice in the matter. I didn't know that at the time. But, you know, once I put it in me, I loved the effect. I can remember it like it was yesterday. The first time I drank, I was about 13 years old. And, you know, I remember just like the way I felt. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. I loved what it did to me. I wasn't that fat little kid anymore. I wasn't full of fear. I wasn't, you know, unnoticed in my family. I was okay. Like, everything was okay. It was a spiritual experience the first time I took a drink. And, you know, I chased that, you know, the rest of my life. I, you know, like all of us, I mean, I didn't drink. I mean, I was 13 years old at the time. I knew that I would do it again. I drank got sick, the whole thing, but I knew that I would do it again. You know, I liked that, the beginning effects of alcohol. You know, so we grew up in a neighborhood where, you know, there were keg parties on the weekends, and, you know, I was the first one there, and, you know, I wasn't a cheap date. I could drink the kids under the table, the boys under the table. It always took me a lot. You know, my claim to fame, you know, I didn't get, you know, I could hold my liquor, so I wasn't that, you know, I didn't just get drunk. And, you know, like I said, I wasn't a cheap date. So I continued in this family where I didn't feel a part of. I didn't feel good in school. I never felt good. And I knew that when I put alcohol in me, it did something for me. And I wanted that feeling. So I, went through high school. I got married. I was in high school. I was a senior in high school and got pregnant. So I got married. And I had a child at 18. So I got out of that house. I got married, you know, and, you know, I was removed from that, you know, environment basically, and thought, you know, like as a kid, like I'm going to make a life for myself. I'm going to have a family and, you know, get, and just everything will be okay, you know. And I was a kid having kids. I had three kids by the time I was like 21 years old. And, you know, so, but I look back on that now and, you know, the people that I hung with in high school, you know, at the time, alcoholism was legal in Jersey. You could go to Jersey and, you know, they would go, you know, 18 and they'd go, you know, to the bars in Jersey. And I kind of got removed from that. And I look back now and I think, you know, they got into heavier stuff. And I was kind of, you know, taken from that, which I think is a blessing, because a lot of the people that I did hang out with at the time are either dead. You know, this one girl, we were talking in the car. This one girl actually has wet brain from, you know, the amount. And that's who I partied with. So, you know, I raised my kids. My alcoholism was kind of not in full swing yet. I had a busy life with kids. And I remember feeling like I missed out. Like, you know, I was jealous of the girls going to Jersey on the weekends. And here I am raising these kids. And I, you know, so I, when I finally, like when my kids got to the age where I got a job, in a, restaurant that's, you know, served liquor, and that's really when my alcoholism really took off. Never served a drink in my life. I lied and got the job there, and you know, like I talk about this a lot. Like I, you know, I would work the lunch shift, and you know, lunch would be over. I'd be, you know, due to pick my kids up at the bus stop, and I'd take a drink. And what kids, you know, like I never wanted to be that kind of parent. You know, I didn't like. But once I put that first drink in me, you know, I was in the hands of the receiver, and, you know, I was just, you know, not available for my kids. And I always, like, you know, didn't realize at the time I was sick. I just thought there was, you know, something wrong with me. How can a mom not be there for her kids, you know? And, you know, it just, I actually know when I actually crossed that line into alcoholism, I was drinking alcoholically within a summer, and I had that thought in my head that, you know, I have to make up for lost time. I missed out on all these good times that my friends were having in Jersey, and I drank with, once I got the okay to do it, I was, you know, going to clubs and just like feeling like I was making up for lost time. No thought about my kids, and, you know, just I wasn't available to them. I was, you know, either hungover, and, you know, when it would come to, like, you know, doing homework and what, like, I wasn't available, you know, either, you know, I was out or, you know, not there. And so, you know, this went on for, you know, I never had DHS. How I didn't have DHS involved, I don't know. But, you know, the kids had a tough life. I mean, I was separated for the first time. I was in a really pretty violent marriage, and, you know, they just grew up as kids shouldn't. And, you know, I think I, I'm just so blessed today to have the relationship that I do with them today. And, I hear stories about women that never get their kids back. My kids are all grown now, of course, but you know, I have a nice relationship with them today. But there was a lot of hurt. There was a lot of anger in them. And there was a lot of, they didn't understand, like, where's mom? She wasn't available kind of thing, you know. So I was introduced to the program. I was at that job that I talked about, and I was drinking and driving, and I got my first DUI, and I think it was 1987, I believe it was. I had worked, I came into my car, got a DUI, and I remember, it was my first one. I am quite a few on my record. I have about four, but my first one was in 1987. I got pulled over by the police, and I don't even remember what, my alcohol level was, but I was definitely drunk behind the wheel. And, I went to a lawyer, and they said it really would look good for you if you go to some type of program. Your alcohol level was so high, and, it'll just look good in front of the judge. So I thought, well, let me check this thing out. I went to my first rehab in, 1987, and I went to, on the boulevard, I forget the name of the rehab, and I remember looking around the room saying, man, I don't belong here. I am nothing like these people in here. I mean, that denial at that age, I think it just, I was there for, I went there. It was going to look good. They'd probably go a little bit easier on me, I guess, or so I was told. And, so that was really my introduction to AA. I got the book. I got the big book. I got, do 90 meetings in 90 days and all that stuff. And I just didn't think it was for me. I wasn't, I wasn't that bad, or so I thought, and this disease is so amazing how progressive and, what denial that we have. And so I got sober in 19, I told you in the beginning I had periods of sobriety. 1991, I came into AA, and I, went to, a lot of meetings, and, I had 5 years of, recovery, sobriety, I guess. I really didn't do any of the things that are outlined in our big book. I just went to meetings, and I had a network of people, and, I got sober in this area in Ben Salem, and I ended up moving away from this area and never did anything about, getting connected where I moved to. And, not too long after, the thought came that maybe I'm cured, and I ended up, drinking. And, so my, that 5 years, I really, no consequences or anything like that. I just knew that there was a better way. And, so I came back to AA, like I said, I'm not a first timer, and, I moved back to my area and really got connected. I had a, home group. I had girls that I was sponsoring. I was part of the prison committee down in Philadelphia. I got involved. I got married. I met my husband in AA, and I really developed these friendships that I had had for, you know how it is, we develop these friendships, and they become our life. I hung out with people in AA. It was just a great life. My husband, my husband and I got married, and we're at meetings all the time. And in 2005 I had a surgery. It was 2005. I had a botched surgery. I had a surgery that didn't go well, and I was on, I thought good footing, but it's such a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. I know that today. I didn't really realize it at the time. So I had this surgery, and I got really, really sick physically. I had kidney failure. I went into, it was just a really, really bad surgery, internal bleeding, and had a lot of physical effects from the surgery. And, so after I had the surgery, I was continually, going to meetings, and you know, I was really resentful at, you know, the hospital. I was really, really resentful at the doctor that performed the surgery. And, you know, our literature talks about resentments being the number one offender. And it, you know, kills more alcoholics than anything else. And, you know, so I had this surgery, and you know, I was, you know, I tried to sue. I was just so full of, like, how could this happen to me? It was just, you know, an awful thing that happened, and they didn't take responsibility for it. I had all the poor me's, and, you know, like, you know, I felt like, you know, my life was ruined, and, you know, I was such a drama queen, you know how that goes. And so, you know, and I really did get sick, really, really sick, very sick physically first. And what I didn't realize that was happening was I was getting sick spiritually and emotionally, and, you know, just the whole thing. You know, alcohol being a subtle foe, it was just, you know, it was lying in wait. I believe that today. And, you know, my disease doesn't care if I have 10 years or 10 minutes. It's just, you know, it is a daily reprieve. I know that today. I was so consumed with self and self-pity that I really couldn't see, you know, what was happening to me. All I know is that I would wake up thinking of this doctor and this, you know, the terrible way that I was treated and this hospital that I wanted to sue. And, you know, like I said, I sought out, you know, legal advice and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I fed this resentment. I nurtured it. I fanned it. And, you know, that was in April of 2005. And in 2006, you know, being in that state of darkness, being in that state of depression, being in that state of poor me, like, ugh. You know, and I'm still going to meetings and I'm still raising and telling my tale, whoa, and how could this happen? I mean, I was using, you know, the meetings like, you know, therapy, I guess, you know. I wasn't really doing what we're supposed to do here. It was just, you know, and people, yeah, it's a sad thing. You know, it was a justifiable resentment, you know, whatever, but it was just, you know, it was just an unfortunate thing that happened. So, you know, I know today that when opportunity meets obsession and I have no mental defense against the first drink, I was going to psychiatrist. I remember, because I was nuts. I mean, I was just really, you know, we pick up way before we actually, the last result is just putting a drink in me, but I'm acting out. I'm just like, you know, just in a really bad, really bad state of mind. And, you know, I just, you know, I remember going to the psychiatrist and, you know, saying, I think I'm schizophrenic. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just, you know, it was a lot of the effects of the surgery itself, but I was there was other issues going on with me physically and, you know, and I was pretty nuts. And, so, you know, the doctor says to me, no, you're 40 years old, you're 45 years old, you don't become a schizophrenic at that. I was just looking for an answer. I didn't realize it was spiritual. I didn't know. I just thought I was crazy, you know, and I'm going along and just, you know, in this darkness, in this dark place, and you know, like I said, I had no mental defense against this first drink, and, you know, opportunity met obsession. I had homicidal thoughts, suicidal thoughts. I was just in a bad, and I'm sober. I'm stark raving sober. I mean, I was just, you know, I look back on that and I'm like, I don't even know how I even, you know, I don't know how I got through it. It was just a really, really bad time. And, you know, just dragging everybody in with me too, you know, into my drama and whatnot. And so in 2006, alcohol is a rapacious creditor. It lies in wait and it looks, you know, I mean, you know, it wasn't a month after the surgery. It wasn't 6 months. It was a full year of this acting out and feeling like sorry and just really just, you know, behavior that, you know, I'm not real proud of. I was doing sober. And, you know, so like I said, opportunity met obsession and I took that first drink and, you know, I'm 10 years away from a drink, and I'm 10 years older. My disease has progressed 10 years. And, you know, my sponsor talks about, I'll never forget it, like, you know, my sponsor talks about I entered a region I never knew existed. I'll tell you guys, it was just one of the, you know, I couldn't stop. I was, you know, like I said, the things that I did back those 10 years before I had picked up a drink, I was doing, you know, drinking in the morning. It's progressive, it's chronic, it's terminal, and I'm in it, and I couldn't get out. I saw no way out, you know. So I'm drinking in the morning. I mean, I'm at this job for like 20 some years. I'm, you know, threatened to lose that. You know, it was just an awful, awful, you know, I ended up in jail. I had 2 DUIs off the bat, institutions. You know, I was 302'd. I mean, my life was like, how did I end up here? I remember going into my first rehab, and I had my big book with the leather cover on it, and I'm taking it in, and I had a 9-year coin in the big book. Like, I was so delusional, like, you know, and I remember them saying to me, you do not have 9 years, you know. I was so delusional, like, yeah, but don't you know I had 10 years? I was so nuts, you know, and... You know, and I'd get out of that rehab, I'd go to Miramount, and I'd be good for 2 days, and I'd be out again. And then I went to, you know, Eagleville, and, you know, I was in and out of detoxes, institutions, and I drank again, and I'm like, you know, I knew that, like, you know, I passed that point to no return. I know that. Like, I know that today. Like, there was no human power, there was no willpower, there was no self-knowledge. I had all that. There was no human power that could have relieved this obsession and the compulsion and this disease of progression that I experienced in that, you know, in that time. And, you know, I wanted to stop. I drank against my will. I love that part. Like, I actually was drinking against my will. And, you know, it was just, if anybody can relate to me, I'm sure you can, but, you know, it's just, you know, jails, yep. Did that, institutions, yep, did that. And, you know, like my out of my best, you know, my best thoughts was suicide. I couldn't live with this way anymore. And, you know, there was suicide attempts, you know, that's one of the 302s, but, you know, I don't get into the good part, but, but anyway, on, you know, that, you know, I, the last, you know, after getting out of jail yet once again, it was April 13th, 2008, like I had it planned, you know, like nobody was talking to me. I was in and out of AA and just, you know, I was getting advice like, you just need to hear a good bottle story. I was living the good bottle story, you know, you just must not want it enough, I was hearing, and I wanted it more than anything. I just wasn't hearing the solution. I wasn't hearing, like, come with me. You know, I have a big book. Let's sit down and let's do this. I was just hearing, you got to make another meeting. You must not want it enough. And I wanted it more desperately than I could ever say. And, you know, I was going to, I guess, you know, I don't fault those people, but, you know, I just know when I see a shaky person coming in the room, I'm not going to tell them to make another meeting. I'm going to take them by the hand and say, come on with me. Let me show you the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't hearing that, and I kept coming back and looking for a solution and wasn't getting it. And, you know, so, you know, that day on April 13th, 2008, my scorecard read 0. I wanted out of this earth. I couldn't do it anymore. I had a plan in place. You know, I had all these pills. I had all this, you know, vodka that I had, that I, you know, and I took every pill that I had, and, you know, I just wanted to end it. And I always get choked up on this because, you know, this was definitely my moment of grace. You know, I just remember that night as vividly. It was a Friday night. It was, you know, as vividly as I'm standing here tonight. I just swallowed all those pills and just, you know, I wasn't thinking about my children that were, I was going to leave. I wasn't thinking. It was just such a self-centered kind of cry for help, but I couldn't live it. I couldn't live the way I was living anymore. And, you know, so, you know, I just remember that night, you know, and, you know, my son's downstairs. They didn't know what I did. My husband at the time's downstairs, and, you know, I just was going to end it all. I wasn't going to tell anybody. And, You know, so I'm laying in bed. I just swallowed all these pills. And, you know, like I said, it was a moment of God's grace. I just begged God, like, please, I'll do anything. Just please, just don't let me die this way. I'll do anything, you know. And it was just like I had a vital spiritual experience at that point. And I'll never forget, I started, like, everything that I ingested just started coming out of me violently. And I just, you know, I was just, you know, just started coming out when I said that prayer, I'll do anything. And there was such a warmth that came over me. I didn't realize it at the time, you know, but I knew, we were talking about that tonight. I knew it was going to be okay. I just was, you know, and I'm on my knees and I'm begging God, like, I'll do anything. And, you know, it was one of these where, you know, that it's just this warm, if you've ever experienced it, I just had this, this blanket was wrapped around me. And you know, everything that had just happened was just like a dream. And, my life kind of flashed before my eyes, and I just had this feeling, like I said, like everything's going to be okay, Ann, you know. And I heard speakers talk about it. I feel like, you know, God came down and pulled me out and said, enough, I have work for you to do. And that's exactly, I think, what happened to me. And, you know, I have been, you know, since 2008 to this time, just, you know, once I said that prayer, that then I meant it. I was placed. I had such the best teachers placed. You know, I look at it now, and it's all been God's grace. I didn't have a license. I didn't drive. I lost my license for 2 years. I had gotten the interlock and all that. But I never not got to a meeting. I never not, you know, I met my sponsor that Wednesday night, Marie Kay. She was at a big book meeting down at Ron and Dittman in Philadelphia. I was introduced to that. And at the time, there was a Father Tom and a Chris B that were running this meeting. And it was on step three. And it was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, I never heard this before. I've been around AA for almost 20 years. I've never heard this before. It was, you know, and I remember saying that. Like, they talked about that selfish, self-centered, and, you know, me running the show and all that. And it was like, I got the chills. Like, I was just like, oh, my God, this is what it's about, you know. It's not about, you know, staying away from a drink and people, places, and things, and, you know, going to meetings and meeting makers make it. This is what it is. This is our solution. I mean, all that stuff's important, but I was hearing the solution for the first time, and I'll tell you, I got rocketed. I'm telling you. I remember that Wednesday night. I came home and I sat in a chair, and I remember just again having another spiritual experience, as I like to call it. Like this warmth. And, you know, like I said, I didn't drive at the time. And my sponsor, you know, she grabbed me at that meeting and she said, have you ever been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous through the big book? And I said, Marie, you know how long I've been. What do you mean? Of course. I mean, I go to step meetings. I go to this. She said, no, has anybody ever taken you through the 12 steps, the first 164 pages? You know, and I said, well, she said, I'll help you, she said. And I knew her story. Hers was, you know, she had the same experience, was in AA for 14 years, 13 years, or whatever it was, and, you know, ended up, you know, life situations and not having a mental defense against the first drink also. And she had a very, very similar experience as what I experienced. And so, like I said, I just couldn't, you know, I mean, you know, I was hungry for it. Like, I was... You know, I met her, and here's how God worked in my life during this time. She lived in Philly. I'm in Newtown. It's like, you know, it's not around the corner. And she had a kid at home, and it, you know, was not feasible for me to be sitting down there. I didn't drive. You know, I wasn't getting down there. But we would meet at Holy Family every Friday night. I'd get a ride down there, and she would sit upstairs and take, and we would read the big book. We would read the solution. And, you know, we went through the doctor's opinion, and we talked about the physical obsession, and we talked about the mental, the physical compulsion and that mental obsession. And I drank, you know, it was like I heard it for the first time. And I'd been in meetings before, but I never heard it broken down the way she broke it down for me. And, you know, and the part in the doctor's opinion where it says, you know, although, you know, selfish, you're seriously, you know, we're seriously ill. And I remember that. And my alcoholic life became the only normal one, you know. And I was hearing stuff for the first time. And, you know, so, you know, we sat down and I went through the steps with her, you know, and, there's a couple really, really, you know, really big things that stand out for me. And the third step, I mean, you know, I didn't have a problem. I knew I was totally powerless over alcohol. I knew my life, just looking at my life, it was so unmanageable. I had no problem with the first step. And the second step, I love the fact that we can choose our own conception of God, you know. But the third step for me was just so, you know, earth-shattering, I guess, another experience for me. I remember being on my knees and saying that third step prayer and really literally turning my will and my life over to this power. You know, and, you know, it was just such an amazing experience on my knees with another woman. And, you know, it was just, you know, and I've since had that experience with other women that I've taken through. It doesn't happen real often, but, you know, I actually felt God's presence, and it was just an amazing, you know, this stuff is powerful, you know, and, you know, so I'd meet her like every week, like I said, at Holy Family College, and we'd go through the steps, and I got right into the steps with sequence and momentum. She said, "You've been around long enough. We're going to do this. We're not going to wait." You know, I used to give people advice: you do your fourth step and you wait a year. You know, like it was nothing. It went everything, you know, against anything that I was taught this time. You know, and you know, so I remember writing out my fourth step and. my fourth step consisted of the doctor, you know, who I resented, the hospital, you know, and there was other people in there, but that was like the main, you know, cause of what I thought or perceived was my, you know, I didn't realize it was my spiritual condition. It was, you know, them. It was all them. If this didn't happen, none of this, it was all that blame kind of thing. And, you know, it was a Wednesday night, and she said, "Did you finish your fourth step?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'll see you on the weekend." She said, "No, we'll do it tonight. You know, we're going to do this now. We're not going to wait." You know, so I made arrangements to see her, and she sat down and heard my fourth step, and I, you know, put the doctor's name on there, and she put the hospital's name on there, and she said to me, "Ann," she said, "Do you think that doctor got up that day and said, 'I'm going to ruin this girl's life'?" She said, "Your part in it was holding that." That was 2005, honey. This is 2008. You know, what's that, honey? You know, like, and she just broke it down. It was like it was removed. And that whole thing, fancy to real, you know, that you know, justifiable or unjustifiable resentment was real in my mind, and it just evaporated, like, on the spot. It was an accident. It happened. People make mistakes. And then it was like, and it was just removed, you know. It was just like, and I look back on that, and it was just so like, you know, God, I wish, you know, I didn't have to go all through that to get to here. But, you know, that was basically God's plan, I know. And, you know, and then, you know, there was a lot of people that I had hurt in this, you know, there was a lot of people on my list that I had hurt and, you know, that I resented. And I was so full of fear of harms done others. You know, all of that, like, and I just sat and talked to her, you know, about it, and she pointed out my part in it, like, it's all my part, I know that, but, you know, where was I selfish, where was I dishonest, where was all that, and it was like, you know, I was hearing it, and they say that no matter how long you are, the big book hits you right where you're at, and that's what was happening for me. It was like, the book was alive, everything I read was like, wow, you know, and I never... It was just such an awesome, awesome experience, you know. And so, you know, I did my fifth step with her, and then, you know, my character defects 6 and 7, I was just, man, there was a lot going on there, you know. And a lot of it was, you know, my resentment. And, you know, like, and I didn't know this, like, you know, when I have a resentment, like, you know, I ask God at once to remove it. We have a resentment prayer. We have a fear prayer. We have a harms done other prayer in the book, right in the book, you know. So I started doing that. You know, I started saying the resentment prayer, you know, and, you know, like, God's not going to remove that, but he's going to place the opposite in my life, and that's forgiveness, you know, so, but I got to practice that. I have to, you know, I have to forgive the person and practice, you know, I have to ask for help with the resentment, you know, through the resentment prayer, and ask for forgiveness. And that's, it started working for me, you know, and all the fears that, you know, what's going to happen and financial and all this, like, you know, just, you know, giving it to God, ask God to remove the fear and, you know, direct my attention to what he would have me be. And, you know, and that started working little by slowly. I started, like, you know, feeling okay, because there was a lot that happened in that, and I was still full of fear. And, you know, I mean, how I didn't, you know, I you know, this is kind of like a story in itself, but, like, you know, at the end of my drinking, like, my employer just wanted to get rid of me. I mean, they were just looking for, you know, I was a disgrace. I mean, I was in the paper. It was just not, I work at a job that, you know, they didn't want to fire me. I had a lot of time in there, and they wanted to catch me in the act, and I'd go to, you know, hungover, and, you know, that HR would come in, and they would, you know, say, you're getting tested today. They wouldn't give me any, and you know, I have all my belongings in my, you know, under my desk, and, you know, waiting for security to come and get me, and they take me and be tested, and I blow a 000. How that happened, I have no idea. Today I know. I wasn't meant to lose that job. Today I help people in my workplace who struggle with alcohol and drug addiction, you know, and that's why I'm still there. I should have lost that job. I know it, but, you know, God has me placed there still for a reason. I know that today. I didn't at the time, but, you know, they were constantly, they just wanted me out of there. I was a disgrace, you know. You know, they moved my office down to the basement, you know. It was just like, just to, you know, trying to guilt me into getting sober. It was crazy. And I used to be, like, so obnoxious. I used to say, well, I know where all the bodies buried. They can't get rid of me. I mean, it was just insane. But anyway, I'm still at that job today, which is, you know, just incredible to me. But I know, like, you know, when there's a guy now that's struggling, and they, you know, they ask me to sit in and just talk to them about our beautiful program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that there is hope, you know, and that's why I'm there, and I know that today. But anyway, I made a list of the people that I had harmed, and a lot of the people that I had harmed were in AA. You know, the one particular shining moment was going to an AA wedding, drunk as a skunk, causing such a spectacle. Oh, my goodness. But I had to go back to all those people, and especially the bride and groom, and make my amends, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, go to my board of directors, and, you know, I put my job, you know, my job was, you know, I disgraced my company. I had to go back to all of them and make amends to the people that I work with, my board of directors, my boss, and get honest about stuff that I did at that job that, you know, I messed up some stuff. I had to get honest about all that stuff. And, you know, it's just been, you know, my relationship today at my workplace is nothing like it was. Like, God can repair any of it. I truly absolutely love this program. I do. And, and I just, like, you know, stay in 10 and 11, and I work with a lot of women. You know, like, I really, you know, step 10, like, just really, like, watching my thoughts, you know, like, you know, after, you know, watching, asking God to remove it, you know, that selfishness, and, you know, and turning my thoughts to somebody who I can help. And it doesn't necessarily mean somebody in AA. You know, I have a girl that I work with, she lost her husband, you know, and I'm in it and feeling resentful. I ask God to remove it, and I go to her and say, Jeannie, what do you need today? How are you feeling today? That gets me out of my selfish, self-centered thinking. And, you know, I've been blessed to sponsor a lot of women. I was on fire with this, especially, like, I didn't drive. I'm sponsoring girls on the phone. Come on, you got to do this. This is so great. Like, the one meeting, I sponsored every girl in there. They'd come over for a big book meeting at my house. I mean, I got this, and I just wanted to give it away. You couldn't shut me up. I mean, it was just, I hope I never lose that. I hope I never lose that enthusiasm. And, God has definitely restored me to my right mind. And, like, I have this beautiful set of clear-cut directions through the 12 steps that show me, you know, when I'm disturbed, when I'm not feeling right, what to do about that. You know, I can go to God. I can ask for forgiveness. I can talk to somebody about it. And we know deep down what it is. We always know the answer. Sometimes we don't want to hear it. And, you know, I work with, and I like sharing this story. Like, this one, This one girl that I work with, you know, she was a tough one, and you know, she came to my house. She'd come to my house every Sunday morning. She was 2 years sober. She was ready to drink. I said, come on, sit down with me. I'm going to show you, you know. And she said, we kind of just discussed the program a little bit. And she talked to me about resentment that she had against her dad. And she said, she's reading ahead. She said, if I have to make amends, I'll never forgive my father. I said, it's not about you. You know, you don't know. You're only at step two right now. You wait until you get to the other steps, and you'll see how this works out. She ends up reaching out to her dad. He made amends. You know, she has a beautiful relationship with him today. And, you know, like, thank God we don't go by our first instinct, because she was like, I will never, ever do this. This is not what I'm going to do. And, you know, we get to see all these miracles happen. You walk into a room and you think the person's half dead, and you see them in 2 weeks. They've gone through some work, and it's like we are transformed, you know, and it's such a cool thing to watch the fellowship grow up among us. It's just, it's the best gig in town. I never got drunk enough or high enough or any of that to get that feeling that I get by watching a new girl and watching her work with somebody else. Like, there's nothing better, I don't think. I think, and I just never, ever, you know, when I, you know, and I have, you know, I'll kind of end with this. Am I good? Am I good? I still have time. So, all right. This last year has been a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of, like, disappointments. You know, there's been a lot of things in my life that are not the way, you know, that I thought I'd be at this point in my life. You know, I'm going through a divorce, which I didn't see coming. You know, I was telling Holly, I had a relationship at work that really, you know, was a betrayal. And it just, there's a lot of stuff that's been going on. Like, people let us down. And, when all this started happening, and, you know, with my marriage breaking up and everything, like, it's just, he put a girl in my life who, you know, like, I'll tell you, she's like a daughter to me that I've taken through the steps, and I've taken her under. Like, that's how God works for me. Like, you know, when I'm feeling in it, the phone will ring, and I'll answer it, and it'll be somebody that, you know, will help me, or, you know, and it's just amazing how that works. But I got to be plugged into this. You know, what would you have me be? Right now, my life's not the way I would, you know, had perceived it, but I believe he's got something better for me, and that's how, you know, I think sometimes he moves things for us to get us to a different level. I'm not sure how all that works, but, you know, I'm not where I was a year ago, thank God. You know, I'm you know, through the other side, you know, and I've had a lot of good people helping me along this path. Like, you know, it's just amazing the help that we get when we ask for it, you know. And it's the help that, you know, from our directions. And, you know, when I do get resentful, you know, justified or not, I can't afford it, so I got to pray for the people, you know. You know, I can't, you know. It showed me, you know, and it gets, it, I can get in that self-pity, self, you know, resentment kind of thing, how, what, you know, all of that. But, you know, what bottom line is, you know, I'm sober through God's grace. You know, people are people. People are human. People let us down. You know, I get that, and I let people down, and I just have to, you know, when I'm disturbed, I either, you know, there's two things. I either owe an amends or I have to forgive, and I know that. And I want to be undisturbed. I don't like that feeling of disturbance. And they're the two things. You know, where am I at? Do I owe an amends? Or do I have to forgive somebody? You know, and everybody's doing the best they can, right? And, you know, there's just, you know, there's one person that's just going to hear you. Don't, you know, you don't know who that person is, you know, and I just try to stay connected and try to stay, you know, God is in his infinite grace, you know, has given me all of this and more. And, you know, I just am, you know, I'm just so very, very grateful. And, you know, I'm going to end with that. That's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.